It's Lake Effect on Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Bonnie North. There are still a few precious weeks of summer ahead for us, still time to squeeze in a trip or two up north, or a few afternoons at the beach, or maybe a round or two of miniature golf. Writer June Melby experienced more than a few summer afternoons of mini golf when she was a girl, but it was not the experience you or I probably had. Melby grew up in Decorah, Iowa, but one day, when she was still in elementary school, her parents announced that they had purchased the Tom Thumb Mini Golf in Wapaka, Wisconsin, and from then on, the family would relocate there each summer to run the classic old golf course and its many obstacles. Years later, Melby had left the Midwest to pursue a life performing in Hollywood when she got the heart-wrenching word that her parents were selling the course. When it was all said and done, Melby looked back on those days in a memoir called My Family and Other Hazards. Speaking with Lake Effect's Mitch Tyke, Melby explained when she realized that losing the golf course would be like losing a part of herself.
I think the second I got the message, I mean, that's the funny thing. I heard, you know, I saw that I had missed a phone call. I saw the blinking red light, and I knew it had sold, and I instantly knew. It was devastating. You know, it was, you know, which surprised the heck out of me. I mean, it was really like hearing your grandfather was dead or something. And I was like, well, wait a second. It's a miniature golf course, and we knew it was for sale. So, you know, my response kind of, completely bewildered me.
Well, and so what emotions were you still trying to sort out when you sat down to write the memoir?
You know, I always apparently thought that I would become a huge success in Hollywood, and then I would sweep back to the Midwest with my great earnings and rescue my parents. Not that they needed rescuing, but then, you know, be able to buy it from them so they could retire, and I would be the superhero, la, la, la.
Think of the great story that would be in People magazine.
I don't know. So I had these grandiose ideas. Apparently, they weren't quite conscious, you know, but they were definitely triggered when I found out, you know, it's it. We found people to buy it. It took four people to come up with the money. You know, too late. Too late.
Well, let's turn the clock even further back. You were 10 years old
yeah.
and living in Northeast Iowa when your parents announced that from here on out you'd be living in Wapaka in the summers to run Tom Thumb Mini Golf. What were they thinking in making that decision?
Well, I don't think they were thinking. Oh, that just sounds really bad. But it just fell into their laps. That's how they put it. They were definitely looking for some kind of summer thing to do. You know, school teachers need to make some money or at least try to make some money. So that's the ironic thing because they actually never charge enough money at the mini golf to make any profit. So that's ironic. But it really just sort of like, well, it's for sale. Wouldn't that be interesting? Maybe we should consider that.
And then there you were.
Basically.
Well, and so paint a picture of the place, if you would. There are miniature golf courses in the Milwaukee area, but they are often today part of, we'll put it in quotation marks, amusement complexes.
Right.
And that is not what this miniature golf course was.
No. It's very different. Well, it's in Wapaka, and it's on the chain of lakes. It's actually on a lake. You know, it wasn't built on a strip with other businesses. There's no bumper cars
right.
driving ranges.
Right.
No, none of that.
There's not a batting cage.
No. So it's actually it's a lakefront cottage that someone decided to build a mini golf course in the yard. So everything else on the street, on the road, is a cottage.
And this is in the days before zoning.
Exactly. There was no zoning. So the school teacher in 1959 named Greg Charlesworth just built a mini golf course from whatever he had on hand. So the property was, you know, on a lake. People could come to the mini golf from the water on their big pontoon boat, their canoe, or drive up or bike up by land. So we were surrounded. Basically, they came off from all directions.
For your family, this was obviously not a lifelong dream realized in those terms. But your dad, who, as you say, was a high school teacher, sounds like he took his role seriously once it started in kind of maintaining a challenging course.
Oh, good gracious. Yeah, his ideal business model was to make a course that was entertaining and challenging so people would come back again and again and again and again. And he also was sort of a frustrated inventor. So instead of doing things like, you know, I don't know, maybe a normal business practice would be like thinking up other ways of bringing in money, like putting in a game room or something, he would tinker in the garage to make very complicated and elaborate moving hazards. So we had six moving hazards on the course, where I think most have maybe one or two. I'm not sure.
Well, and you write about one of them, which sounds like it took its inspiration from drag racing. But I think you write that I don't know that anybody knew what that inspiration was when they played the course.
He claimed this. Do you want me to read the thing?
Sure.
I don't know if I can paraphrase it. And
I think you could explain it. Why don't you give us a little flavor?
Okay. One reason there were so many hazards at number four is that it was here that my father, a teacher of physics and chemistry, began carrying out what you could call his experiments. He created a device we called the colored light thing. If the Nobel Committee, in addition to awards for literature and medicine, voted to acknowledge the most complicated gizmo on the planet designed to hinder the path of miniature golf balls, the colored light thing would win the prize, and my father would dress in a tuxedo and step up to the podium, and everyone in Sweden would lean forward in their seats to learn from the expert how it worked. And my father would look into the microphone and say, "Well, and then chuckle a bit. Because even though he was the one who built it, the one to design it, the one who thought it was a good idea in the first place, he finds it a very difficult contraption to explain. I do too. From the outside, the colored light thing looked like a white plywood box about the size of an ottoman. On the top, there protruded a 2-foot tower. It had 4 red lights on one side, 4 green lights on the other. The lights would click from red to green. When all 4 lights were green, a flap, like a doggy door, would lift up from underneath, and people would madly putt their ball. And then a click. The lights all went back to red, and the door would close again. According to Dad, the colored light thing was supposed to resemble the starting lights at a drag strip race. It's called a Christmas tree, he said. We never knew what he was talking about, and no one who came to play did either. In 30 years, we never heard anyone refer to number 4 as a drag racing tree. People called it that white box, or that thing with the lights. Others simply called it that one where my ball is stuck underneath. And now, without further ado, my father will try to explain his grand invention, the colored light thing. The first version I made used 2 solenoids, and when that door opened, it went boom! He claps his hands to demonstrate the explosion. The voltage was too high, noisy, and not really safe around people. Boom! He claps again and laughs. So I had to change the whole shebang. He tells me that the next version used roller skate wheels. Why roller skate wheels, I ask. I don't know. Maybe I just had them around. Eventually, he replaced the colored light thing, not because the mechanism broke down, but because he almost had a nervous breakdown whenever tourists shoved their putters underneath to push out their balls. In the end, it was his love for the invention and his need to protect it from people that finished the hazard's life.
June Melody reading from My Family and Other Hazards, all about to hole number 4. How difficult was it to take each of the 18 holes on this course and find something metaphorical in it?
It wasn't hard at all. I did structure the book around the 18 hazards. There are 18 chapters, and that was easy and really fun. I know I did that because I thought it'd be a fun way to write it. You know, boy, love-hate relationship with each of these hazards, you know, because they required so much upkeep. You know, anything made in 1959 and has been out in the weather where it's a lot of paint.
And right, and there's a lot of, you know, sort of repurposed stuff that was on this course.
That's a new word for an old-fashioned way. You know, the man who'd built it was from the Depression era, just like my dad, and the turrets of the castle were, we found out one day when we lifted them up, they were like empty soup or fruit cans. And with the flagpole was perhaps a repurposed television antenna back from, for those who remember what a television antenna looked like.
There's an old rocking horse on the course.
There's a rocking horse, yeah, a horse that leaps over the hurdle. So, you know, that was really fun for me, finding a theme for each one. You know, for example, the windmill. Okay, we have a windmill because, you know, why is it everyone who comes to mini golf has to have a windmill? And so we have a windmill. So that's hole number 9. So chapter 9 is about them, the customers, and, you know, what you do for them because that's what they need.
When you were a kid, it would be easy to resent the potential summer vacations lost by spending the summer working to run a mini golf course. And you're right about missing that and spending, you know, your big getaway on your birthday was going with your sister to use the running showers at the campground nearby. But today
– we loved sneaking into the campground. It was the sneaking in and doing something we considered illegal that was so charming for us.
Today, though, how do you evaluate what summers could have been versus what they actually were?
Oh, good gracious. How long a time do we have to talk?
And it seems too easy to say that, you know, today I realized that these were the best days of my life.
You know, it's so complicated because, you know, yes, we didn't have the chance to pile in the station wagon and drive across the country to go to the national parks or whatever kind of ideal people think of for a summer vacation. But on the other hand, you know, we had this place that needed all of us to work at it to make it what it was. And it really brought us together in ways I didn't realize. And we're all such different people. That's why it was kind of fun to write the book. We're all very different from each other. And the other thing is that having a place that's colorful and fun in your backyard is not a terrible thing, you know? People would show up and laugh and laugh. So all hours of the day, you've got people laughing with each other. That's not a terrible thing at all. You know, yes, it's weird to look out your bedroom window and see a clown. Okay, sure. But
this is the clown on hole 18. This is not a clown playing miniature golf. Yeah.
Good point. Yeah, that would be a little too weird.
Well, it sounds like there were plenty of weird people that did show up.
Oh, sure. You know, and, you know, and people on vacation drop their guard a little bit. I think we all know.
You described being mortified by the biker gang that showed up.
Oh, the motorcycle gang. Oh, the first time we had a motorcycle gang show, we were panicked because, you know, they dress to intimidate. And, you know, here's this course. It's little tiny, delicate moving things. And anyone who wanted to could really wreak havoc. But that was just so charming. They loved it. They were like little, not teddy bears out there. I don't know how you put it. We were learned, like, you not to judge people. And, you know, it really was a great experience. You know, you could learn so much by just watching people.
Well, and it must have been pretty powerful to realize, maybe even still today, that generations of summer vacation pictures of people that you know, maybe knew a little and many you didn't know at all are of your backyard.
Yeah.
I mean, that you had this hand in, you know, the success or failure of somebody's getaway.
I know. I mean, I'm sort of possessively would love to see these pictures because, you know, yeah, we did put so much of our time towards other people's family get-togethers and vacations, and we love to see that results, but they've told us, you know.
I'm sure there are people listening to this interview who will have remembered time spent on the Tom Thumb golf course.
I did a reading at Boswell Books in Milwaukee, and a good portion of the people there came up and said, oh, yes, we've been playing for many years, or we used to rent a cabin across the lake from Tom Thumb and came to play every summer. So it's awesome because we shared with these people. Yeah, we didn't know their names, but we knew their faces because they kept coming back.
Nostalgia and sentimentality sometimes get a bad rap, but yeah. I gather you have come to embrace this in yourself.
You know, I don't understand why they get a bad rap, really. I mean, I think there's such a hype these days to keep up with things because of technology, and there's this pressure to buy the latest things or you get left behind. But I think most of us really have this great, I don't know, what is nostalgia? You're realizing there's something very charming about things and people and places in our childhood, especially.
Well, and I got to talking with one of our essayists here the other day about our respective kids and how much they enjoy hearing stories about their parents' childhoods. And it struck both of us that, you know, of course we don't consider this stuff history as it's taking place. And now we get older and it seems like, you know, suddenly we appreciate this time before and we get likewise this kind of nostalgia for the present, this realization that you know, we're ephemeral.
Yeah, it's happening now. It's also happening now.
Yeah.
You know, isn't that funny?
This interview will be over soon.
Don't tell me it's true. You know, I've been asked, so what's it like writing a book after doing stand-up comedy? Is there any kind of overlap? What did you learn from that? And they expect me to talk about punchlines or word choice. And that's true. You do learn how to keep things tight. But the other thing I think I learned is when you do stand-up comedy, what you're doing is you're saying, I think there's something we all share, me and this, everybody in this audience, that we all kind of agree on, and you may not be conscious of it. I'm just going to go ahead and say it. I'm going to be the one who just will take that leap. And I'm just going to assume you're going to follow me. And so maybe that's what the overlap is. So I'm saying here in this book, I think nostalgia is way more common than we like to admit. And I'm just going to go ahead and say, you know what? There were some really awesome times at Tom Thumb. And yes, I miss it. And everybody else probably has their own family traditions that they do every summer. And maybe they miss them too or still do them.
Well, and you know, nostalgia and sentimentality sometimes, you know, gets the bad rap. But then you say authenticity and people think, oh, I want something authentic. And really, they're talking about the same thing. When you go to a place like Tom Thumb and you're actually having this fun and in the moment and it is, you know, in a way, unself-conscious, both the golf course and the fun that you're having, it's a much different thing than living for Instagram.
Yeah. You know, I think what this brings to mind, too, is the last days that my parents had Tom Thumb, there was still the real estate for sale sign out front. And yes, someone had offered to purchase it, and they said they were going to run it, but there was this uncertainty. And so then, as my mom said, people realized it may not be here next year. It may not go on. And they came to the ticket booth semi-panicked, asking, you know, will this still be here? Are you going to be here? Is it closed forever? And they took it for granted until that moment.
Well, June Melby, it's a delightful book. I'm glad we could share your history and your past, and best of luck in the future.
Well, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
June Melby's memoir about summers growing up around her parents' Wapaka miniature golf course is called My Family and Other Hazards. Melby is back, living in her hometown of Decorah, Iowa, and she spoke with Mitch Teich on a recent book tour, which included stops at Books & Company and Boswell Book Company. You can find out more about June Melby, plus see a link to the real estate listing for Tom Thumb, just in case you'd like to become the latest steward of that Wapaka mini golf tradition, on WUWM.com/lake effect. We'll take one last break and then meet a librarian and poet who writes poetry about libraries. We'll hear all about it in just a moment when Lake Effect returns on WUWM.